Please be respectful of our speaker. Everybody ready? All right. Without further ado, please welcome, big round of applause, our speaker for this evening, Michelle L.
You okay with the chair?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good. Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. You hear that? No?
You gotta talk into it.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
You want me to raise it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do it to...
I'll raise it up.
Perfect.
Try that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, cool.
Whew, I'm nervous. Good Lord. I don't know how I got out here. I don't know why you invited me here, but I am grateful. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean this for the most sincerity. It is absolute privilege to be of service in AA. I was thinking when I was driving here, I'm like, I don't know why I said yes. And then I'm like, well, I never said no to a free drink. Like, somebody offered me a free drink. I'm like, yes, sir. Thank you. And so when I'm asked to be of service, I just automatically say yes. I don't even try to think about it. And if you really knew me, you would know, like, I grew up a shy, scared little girl. You can hear my voice right now. I'm still scared, right? But at the same time, when I'm in here, it's like, I know people in here. Everyone, when I walked in the door, is, like, so friendly. And when I came into AA, I felt that. I immediately felt like I connected to you. And I still get that feeling today. I've been sober since 2016. Thank you very much. June 12, 2016, my home group is currently in Santa Cruz. I go Saved by Grace on Tuesday nights. I got sober in Napa. I'm going to be back in Napa next month. My home group is going to be on Tuesday night, Crosstalk at Crosswalk. What do I want to say about that? So the last time I shared in front of a crowd like this, it was 600 people. It was my mother's service. My mother had passed away. And it was 6 months before I got sober. And I remember my sister said, because my dad had asked me to speak. And she goes, you've never spoken in public without a drink in your hand. And she's like, you're not going to go to mom's service drinking, right? And I was like, of course not. Absolutely. I would not do that. But you know, you guys, there's no way that I could go to that service and not drink. So it's just a miracle today to be up here and to share and just try to speak from my heart. So I grew up a little girl in an alcoholic home. Maybe you guys have that same experience. My father's an alcoholic. My grandfather's an alcoholic. All my uncles are alcoholics. The only difference in my family is that it's like a badge of honor. Like, that's just how my family was. When my father married my mother, this is in the 70s, he says, I'm an alcoholic, I'll be one to the day I die. I'm like, what? And then my mom married him. And I remember, they were together for 49 years. And I remember asking my mom, I said, why did you marry this man? And she goes, you know, I didn't know what alcoholism was. Your father was a fun guy. He was very social. And I think that she learned what alcoholism, an alcoholic was. You know, I think she endured 49 years being with a beautiful, beautiful human being, a tender-hearted human being, as we all are. I love my father very much. I respect him. I respect him as a man. He's the most revered, loving man. And I was also, like, in deep shame growing up. I was that little girl that would call the bars, and I'd be like, I'd call River City. I would call the old Adobe. This is in Napa. And I'd say, is my dad there? 6, 7, 8 years old. Like, can you tell him to come home? Like, you know, that's the type of childhood I had. And one time I was sharing that in AA, and this woman comes up to me afterwards, and she's like, I remember you calling. She's like, I was your father's bartender. And I'm like, oh, that's embarrassing. So when I grew up, I never wanted to be an alcoholic. I was so sure that I wasn't going to be one because I never wanted that. I never wanted, like, what my father did for me, I will say the greatest blessing that he did is that he acknowledged he was an alcoholic. He acknowledged that he has a disease. And he would tell us that. I'm the youngest of three. My dad had three girls. And he would say, I love you girls so much. I want you to know, never ask me. This is out. Never ask me to choose you or to choose alcohol. He goes, I'm gonna love you no matter what. He's like, but alcohol's always gonna be part of my life. So it was just kind of like ingrained in me, like, oh, okay, this is just something you have to live with. And so then as a little kid, like, I never wanted to be that. And I will say in my family, it was very much acknowledged that as long as you get up and you go to work, then you're good. So you come home, you come to the wife, but you get up, you drink until Lord knows when, and you get up and go to work. So that's what I was taught. So that was the type of, like, quote-unquote, you know, functional alcoholism I was taught. If you have a problem and you can't make it to work, then you probably should check yourself into something and get outside help. That's what I was taught. And actually, now that I said that, I just want to read one thing from chapter 4. Chapter 4, We Agnostics. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably an alcoholic. Even kind of soft language for the big books. Like, you're probably an alcoholic. You know, it's like, you can make that decision for yourself, right? We were not really here to diagnose. And then it just continues to say, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So spiritual experience will conquer. How do we get a spiritual experience? When I first got sober, I'm trying to figure out the why. Like, oh, it's my family, it's this, it's X, Y, and Z. It's like the spiritual experience. I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to have a spiritual experience. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I thought I had a drinking problem. And I wanted to stop. And I wanted to stay stop. Actually, that's a lie. I just lied. I didn't want to stay stop. I wanted to actually, like, figure out a way to kind of calm it down. That's what I really wanted. I ended up having a spiritual experience. I'm a completely different human today. Like, I'm a kind woman today. If you told me I was gonna come get sober and be kind, that wouldn't have been attractive to me. So in early recovery, like, I wanna be kind. But today I wanna be a kind woman. I also wanna be an honest woman. I also wanna be of service. I don't wanna sit here and think about myself constantly. That's amazing. I'm selfish and self-centered. And so my drinking was not amazing. That's why, like, when I came here, I'm like, I don't know why they asked me to share, you know? My drinking was, I tried to control it from day one because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. So when I first started drinking, I had all the rules. This is why I identified to, like, chapter 3 more about alcoholics, because, like, what I tried to do is, okay, I'm not gonna drink in the weekdays. I'm not gonna drink in the morning. I'm not gonna drink alone. I'm not gonna have alcohol in the house. Like, had all these rules. Now, if I wasn't an alcoholic, I probably would be doing those rules. That would be great. But obviously what happens is all those rules, by the time that I'm, you know, getting sober 8 years ago, like, that's what I said when I'm drinking in the morning. I'm drinking at my mother's service. I'm in such pain. I can't even imagine feeling the loss of my mother. The only thing I could even think of is that I got to put something in my body because I literally feel like I'm crawling out of my skin. And so alcohol for me was such a solution. Coming from, like, a childhood where I was just, like, introverted and scared, and I didn't know how to make eye contact with people. I was just so uncomfortable in my skin, so that when I finally started drinking, I was like, yes. Like, oh my God. That was my first spiritual experience, where I immediately had alcohol and I was like, I'm funny, I can dance, I'm pretty, I'm all these things. I literally, but, like, came to life. And then my only concern is the first time I ever drank, I had 8 shots and I threw up 8 times. And I was like, okay, that's a little bit messy. And I want to learn how to, like, control this thing, right? So then all the rules came in. And that's my manipulation. That's me trying to control this thing. But I love the effects of alcohol, right? That's why we drink. We love the effects of alcohol. I was in juvenile hall the other day sharing about, you know, what we do. And I said, let's not pretend that it's not fun. Because the truth is, it's fun. In the beginning, it's fun. Then it's fun with some problems. And then it's a lot of problems and a little bit of fun. And so if we didn't have that trajectory, you know, if I'm still having a good time, I probably wouldn't have to, like, not drink, you know. So what happened for me? So yeah, if you want to, there's nothing about the mess. There's nothing really exciting. I'm a blackout drinker. I say as a woman being a blackout drinker is that I'm really grateful that I have a codependent sister. So I typically, because I don't trust anybody, I would always drink with my sister. And my sister's that good middle child, that golden child. So being a blackout drunk, she for a lot of the time made sure that I was okay and safe. So I'm very grateful for that. I've also made amends for that. And like I said, what happened to me was that like 10 years of my life flew by like that, and I felt like nothing had changed. I was not happy with my life. I blamed everybody else. I blamed my job. I blamed my boyfriend at the time. I blamed the world. I blamed all you people. Like, I was irritated. You know, they say restless, irritated, discontent. I was at times 10. And I thought everyone else was the problem. So then, I try to fix it. And I don't think drinking's the problem. Drinking's not the problem. Drinking's the solution. So I try to do all these other, like, self-help things. You know, I went and saw Oprah. I saw Tony Robbins. I did all the different books and meditations. I spent a lot of money trying to, like, fix myself. And yet, I was the same. And at the time, I was at Juvenile Hall. I was a correction officer at Juvenile Hall in Sonoma County. AA came in. AA came in and shared the message. I was attracted to it. I was like, oh, I like what these people are talking about. I like that they keep it honest. I have family that are alcoholics. I don't quite identify as an alcoholic yet. I have family members, though. And I would sit in on these meetings. It wasn't even my, like, post. I would actually go, like, break the person who was supposed to sit in, and I would sit in on the meetings. And I really, now I just identify. Like, I identify. And that was, like, my first experience with AA. And so cut to, like, a few years later, I am in the hospital with my mom. My mom is very sick. My mom had cancer. My mom had asthma and emphysema. I watched my mother struggle to breathe for about 24 years of her life. And so she was on oxygen. She was subsequently ventilated. And when I saw my mother transition and I saw her turn blue, it was a very surreal experience. Also a really beautiful experience if you get to, like, be with your parents when they transition. And the moment I left the hospital was, I was walking out and an ex-boyfriend was like, he said to me, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "You can get me a bottle." And he's like, "You cannot be serious." Because the truth is, I actually never drank like that in front of him. I don't know if you're like me, but I had different faces that I kept up in my alcoholism. So I drank like certain types in front of certain people, but I did not do that in front of him. But that was the only way I felt at that moment that I could grieve. Now today that feels so sad to me because I felt like this is how I'm going to honor my mother. It really felt like it was a ritual. Like, I'm a vodka soda girl, and I was going to drink rum and Cokes because that's what my mom liked. Like, that's the alcoholic mind. Like, this is how I'm going to honor this woman that gave me life. And today, as a sober woman, I was like, oh, my gosh, I have so many tools. I would pray. I would write. I would thank her. I would talk about it. I would cry. That would have been nice if I cried. All these different experiences that I get to do as a sober woman today. I think that's, like, the thing about being a sober alcoholic is that, man, I feel like a super, like, we have superpowers. And I know that sounds, like, really corny, but it's true. Like, to go in the world, life's going to be lifey. We're going to have all the trauma and dramas that we have of life. And then to do it sober, to not pick up, to not, like, anesthetize myself, to actually be in the experience, and I would say sunlight of the spirit, and it's very uncomfortable, because life can be really uncomfortable. Like, I mean, that's the blessing. And the only way you get that is from a spiritual experience. Stopping to drink alcohol, that's fantastic. That's great. But that's not going to keep me. Like, making a decision to come in the rooms, that's so honorable. It really is. It was so hard for me to come in the rooms, not because I was just scared. I liked what you had. I was just scared. And when I came into the rooms, like, I sat in the back. I still didn't talk to anybody. I thought everyone was really friendly. I just didn't want to talk to people. And what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in this room is that, like, they say, we'll love you till you love yourself. That's my absolute experience. We will love you until you love yourself, because a lot of us have a hard time doing that, right? And so when I came into the rooms, I want to make sure I'm good on time. I really wanted to keep to myself. I didn't really want to be friends with anybody. I didn't want to, like, do this thing. And the women swooped me up. And I think that's the greatest gift is, for me as a woman in sobriety, is the women in this fellowship. I'd lost my mother. And all of a sudden, I had all these maternal women who could mentor me, obviously sponsor me, and who could guide me into being what I would say today, like coming into like a grown woman today, coming into a sober woman today. And one of the beautiful experiences of AA is that I was sharing with people earlier tonight at my first, the first meeting I ever shared at was Never Too Young in Napa. And my mother's name was Kay. Her name was Kaylin. And I was sharing at this meeting, and they said, are there any newcomers here tonight? And this girl gets up, and she says, I'm a newcomer. My name's Kay. I started bawling. I just started crying. I don't know if you know this, like, there's not a lot of young people named Kay these days, okay? So, and then we talked after the meeting, and I've never seen her again. And I just know that was, like, one of my first spiritual experiences where I just go, that my mother co-signed on me being here, so I'm never leaving AA. If you were to kick me out, even though we wouldn't do that here, I would never leave it. I know that I'm meant to be here, and I know that my mother's here with me at all times. So about one thing that I just want to say about that spiritual experience, you got to surrender, you got to get a sponsor, you got to work the steps, you got to be of service, you got to give this thing away. When I first sat down tonight, a gentleman said to me, are you giving this thing away, essentially? It's like, absolutely. That's why I say it's like an honor and a privilege to give this thing away. And my very first sponsor said to me, you know, you might be the only big book that people ever see. Take that in. Like, you might be the only big book that people ever see. So how I carry myself in the rooms and out of the rooms, I want to be an example. And how that showed up in my life is that when my mother passed away, I had moved in. I had moved in to help caretake with my mom. And I moved in, obviously, with my very alcoholic father. And so when she passed away 10 days after I moved in. And I was immediately, like, obviously in grief, and now I have this man in my life who's, I don't want to take care of, I can tell you that. And what happened is, when I got sober, 6 months later, my father, before then, in his drunken states, would say how proud he was of me. He's like, I see the change in you. And you know, you got that sober, that drunk person just telling you how much they love you, or like, oh, thanks, Dad. And, but then 3 months later, after I got sober, my father got sober. Yeah. And when my father got sober, you know, I moved into caretaking for my mother. That was the intention. But, you know, she had a bigger plan. So when my father got sober, my father was, you know, 76 years old. This guy's been drinking since he was 15 years old. So it was, we probably should have got some outside help. We didn't. He got really despondent. He couldn't get out of bed. He wasn't, like, nonverbal. He would just stare out the window. My dad's a very gregarious guy, sober or not, very gregarious. And so I got to take care of him. You know, I got to be there in this very precious time. And one little story about that, I was like, I'm a holistic nutritionist. And so I was feeding him, like, you know, green smoothies and juices, and I was doing essential oils, and I'm, like, rubbing his feet, and I'm walking through, like, a meditation, and I'm doing all the holistic things, right? And after, like, 2 weeks, my dad, like, walked into the kitchen, and he had not been, he just hadn't been conversing or doing anything, so he walks into the kitchen, and I'm like, oh, hi, Dad. And I'm like, you feeling better? You know, and he's kind of like just like dazed, but he's like, yeah, I'm feeling better. And guess what, you guys? I'm in early sobriety, and I'm still like selfish, self-centered. So I think I've done something. So I'm like, Dad, what do you think it is? I'm like, do you think it's the smoothies? Do you think it's the juice? Do you think it's the teas? You know, what did I do? And my father, who's been an atheist my entire life, says, I don't know. Still kind of like in his days, you know? And he goes, I was just laying there in bed, and I said, please help me, please help me, please help me. He goes, and it helped me. Help is like the best prayer. One of the acronyms I love for help, hello, eternal, loving presence. And sometimes that's all the prayer that we need. And so when I said to my dad, who I know is an atheist, I said, well, Dad, who are you praying to? Just to kind of get it. He says, I don't know, but it helped me. And if that's not divine, if that's not spiritual, you know, I was that little girl calling the bar saying, hey, can I just have a sober dad? I'm a grown 44-year-old woman today and I have a sober dad. Like, so the miracles of AA, like, they happen. And like they say, like, don't leave before the miracles happen. Let me tell you, we're all miracles. The fact that you guys are being silent and quiet while I'm talking, it's kind of freaking me out, but it's actually a miracle. Like, all of it is a miracle that we're here, that we're sober, that we're relatively sane. You know, all of it is a miracle. And I encourage you, if you're in the rooms and you're new and you're crawling out of your skin, oh my God, God bless you. Stay. Do the work. Talk to anybody. Like, and if you're irritated and annoyed, perfect. If you're in the rooms and you've been sober for some time and you're also irritated and crawling out of your skin, wonderful. You're welcome here. Again, we're going to love you till you love yourself. And that's all I got. I love AA. I love you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Give you
oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.